This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to the Human-Animal Connection Show, where we believe we can communicate with all animals. Join us as we explore the 33 principles and healing methods of the human-animal connection. As animal lovers, we know that you share our commitment to making the world a kinder place for all creatures. Together, let's embrace the transformative healing power of the human-animal connection.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Human-Animal Connection. I'm really happy to have you here with me. I have a really fun show for you today. I have Albert Ferraro, and he's a zookeeper in Florida. And if you've ever wanted to talk to a zookeeper and find out what really goes on in zoos, this is our chance. So I'm just really happy because there's so many things that the animals have taught him, and we're going to hear some of those fun stories. So welcome, Albert.
Thank you, BB.
So what's it like to be a zookeeper?
It's great. It's very interesting. It's very rewarding. It's a lot of long days and physical work, but the bonds you make with those animals are very, very special.
That's wonderful. I mean, I'm just hoping that all zookeepers have these kinds of bonds and all the animals in zoos. So tell us, you know, maybe a story about a bond that you maybe didn't expect that really turned out to touch your heart in some way.
Oh, a bond that I didn't expect. Let's see.
Or maybe you expected them all. I don't.
Not times. So when I first got started, this was 10 plus years ago, I was living in Louisiana, and I started working for a small zoo there, and I was taking care of mostly, when I first started, I was taking care of large hoof stock. So I had a small herd of giraffe, two rhinos, two pygmy hippos, and a few tortoises in my a few giant tortoises in my care that lived in like a big off exhibit, like kind of field they just hung out in.
Yeah.
I had never worked with large African hoof stock before. I was even shocked that someone gave me a shot at those animals. But that was probably one of the more rewarding things, is that I had never, I mean, the zoo that I grew up at and interned and everything when I was in college, did not have the largest hoof stock we had. I think was American bison. Mm-hmm. So when someone gave me the keys to the castle of like four giraffe,
mm-hmm,
and these two rhinos, that was just, it blew my mind.
So I really want to hear about the giraffes. What was it like to get to know them? Was it easy to get to know them? Did they trust you right away? What was it like?
No. So they take some warming up.
Mm-hmm.
They're relatively cautious animals, and so you have to spend a lot of time with them and get them to trust you. And then once you do, they'll start to open up a little bit. By the time, towards the end of my time there, I could kind of walk up it was a big kind of moated setup, so I could like walk right up to it and be like face to face with them. The younger female we had would kind of come up and let me give her a little kiss on the nose. Yeah, that was pretty neat. They were a lot of fun. I really grew attached to the male rhino that we had. I did not expect to like form a bond with him, but he was a very, very smart, personable animal. He loved people.
Uh-huh.
He'd follow me around, like if I was walking around the yard, like around the outside of the yard, he'd perk up, hang out. He would love when we had like a big setup in the holding where they could pull their heads inside, so that way you could like kind of do some medical procedures on them, and it,
uh-huh,
could kind of stay still in place. And he would love it when he put his head through that big gate, and I would like grab his horn and like play with him. I would almost like give him a big hug. He'd get real excited and throw his head up. Be like, oh my god! But
that was not. Yeah, that was really awesome. He was really fun. I loved him. I worked with the other, we had a young one-horned rhino there too, and she was really cute. She was real, really stubborn. She spent a lot, she didn't want to do anything.
Oh.
I remember there was, she was relatively new
to the zoo. So she had a really big barn and then a really big yard, and she would a lot of times like to hang out in that, you know, all the doors could be open, but she'd just be sitting inside that barn. And I have that yard set up with like food everywhere, a big toy to throw around, like a giant mound of hay, and like fresh branches to eat. And she'd just be sitting around in there. She's like, this is where I feel like sitting today. And I'm like, oh, please, no one can see you. I remember it was the zoo's big spring fest.
Okay.
And they were kind of like, hey, can you really try to make sure that she's like out and visible? Cause you know, she's like, you know, new animal. Well, we gotta make sure, you know, it's like 4,000 people. Then I was like, oh God.
Oh,
I was like begging with this. I was like, please go outside. I was like, come on, let's run. Let's, you know, I got her to come up with some food. And I was like playing with her in the barn, running back for getting her all excited. And I just came running out. That like a friend of mine saw me, just saw me running around the side of the bar in and out, like shouting all like playfully. She's like, what were you doing? I was like, I was trying to get her to go outside.
Yeah.
She's like, my friend was like, that was the weirdest thing I've ever seen. I was like, she was up and running and romping and playing. I thought she'd follow me and go out for the day.
Yeah.
And she finally did, but I was like,
Yeah, well, they have their own opinions, right? They
want.
Yeah, they're gonna do whatever they want. That's neat. So what animal really
now in my older age, I could care less if anybody goes outside. People call me all like, where's this? I don't know, wherever she wants to be.
Right? Good. That's good. Yeah. And so what animal surprised you the most?
What animal surprised me the most? Oh boy, I've worked with alligators quite a bit. Those animals I think surprised me the most. I at my previous job I did a lot of programs, so we did educational programs with venomous reptiles and non-venomous reptiles. We had two big pythons, a reticulated python and a Burmese python, and we had 13 alligators. And they lived in a gigantic, basically like a big natural Sulphur Spring exhibit, mangrove growth everywhere. It was basically like a little section of Florida ecosystem fenced in, and they put a bunch of alligators in there. And they lived really well. Hi, now I've got a cat.
Okay, this is your foot, but you're a zoo at home, right? Yeah,
they were amazing. We had a big beach in that exhibit that we could go out either multiple times a day or once a day and do a big training demonstration with Highbud, with all 13 of those animals all at once, and it was the most amazing thing I have ever done in my career to this day.
Wow,
Yeah, obviously, I knew a lot about alligators and things going into that, but I had no idea how intelligent those animals were.
I learned they can learn their individual names.
They did. Each of them knew their names. Each of them knew their names. They all had individual personalities. They were their own person. Each of them.
Wow.
They would all do certain things, and anytime anyone was, you know, creeping up or trying to do something, you would just call their name. They go, oh. Hi, it's Biddy. They were brilliant creatures. We had one that was the size of a truck.
Hey.
And he was the gentlest towards people. He was towards us. He was gentle and friendly. He was in love with the reptile supervisor. Like that was his mom. Like he followed her. He followed her around the beach if she wasn't paying enough attention to him. If she was training one of the other alligators, one of like his big brothers, he'd start to get jealous and pushy. And he'd come snapping over and push them out of the way and be like, that's my mom. And it was the funniest thing in the world. If I was on the beach, he was real scared because I had a big, loud, booming voice and I had a microphone. And so he'd get real quiet in the water because the guy who he didn't see every day was out there shouting. which we had one that was probably one of the smartest animals I've ever seen in my entire life.
In what way? What did she do?
She picked up on the slightest of patterns. So we had, just like all the other animals at the zoo, those gators got yearly exams, or we did like bi-yearly. So every couple years they got a full physical. Mm-hmm. And, you know, nobody particularly likes going to the doctor.
you know, even, you know, we used a lot of training to make it as voluntary as possible, but of course it still did involve an amount of restraining of them and things. So they would get a little grumpy for a day or two, but then they'd show right back up at the beach and all's forgiven. Mm-hmm. But this one alligator figured out that when one of the reptile keepers wore a certain pair of shorts, that was exam day.
Wow.
And I remember this was the funniest thing. We spent weeks training them in the morning because their usual training time was in the afternoon for the program for the guests. But so we spent weeks doing morning training sessions. Like we're gonna make sure it's not weird that when we show up at the beach first thing in the morning, because they're incredibly intuitive. If we showed up at a weird time of day, it might come over, but they'd be really weird about it. If the wind was blowing too much, those alligators weren't a weird. They're very
interesting.
They're surprisingly sensitive. That's why I like them so much, because they were very different than what people here in Florida portray them as. They're wonderful creatures. But so we spent weeks and weeks doing this. And finally, the day comes, and he's got on his usual gator exam clothes, the oldest, most beat up shirt that he's got, these shorts, these big, huge rips in them. You're like, oh, these are my gator exam day clothes. And we go, ha, it's funny. We got out there, she saw him in those clothes and just floated way out in the water and just watched. As all the other gators came up, she just said, nope. And eventually some of the others started backing off because they figured it out. But we were kind of beside ourselves. We're like, what in the world? What, we did everything perfectly. Everything's been the same for the past 3 weeks. And then this guy, he goes, the pants.
Yeah, that's wild.
It took two weeks again. And he had to come out in his full attire as if he was giving like a show. True, into a pair of nice pants, a nice polo shirt, destroyed for this exam. But that was what finally, and even then, she was still mildly suspicious. It was incredible. It was still interesting. She went on old pants. She was that same pants he wore last week when Scar had his exam.
So wild.
It was.
Now, how do you do an exam of an alligator?
Oh, it's very long. So ours were all target trained.
Mm-hmm.
So we would walk them all the way up the beach, and we would actually you've got to kind of, you know, have a rope on them, but you can train them to walk into that rope. So you could walk it and then cinch it down, and then from there, you do have to, if you've ever seen people at any place, like you do kind of have to jump onto them. So it's a very extensive process. It takes a lot of planning. It takes multiple people holding ropes on one end or on each end. And then you can sedate them, do their exam, wake them back up, and let them go back in the water.
Okay.
So it's, but.
Now, when you jump on them, they're not sedated though, right?
No.
How do you make sure that you're not lunch?
So you got your rope, and then from there, you can kind of put a gentle little rope and a pull on their jaw, and that will hold their jaw closed. Because it's difficult. Like, you can hold it, like they could bite down hard, but they don't open as strong. So you can use a rope to hold down, and once that's in place, you're going from the back and then on top, so that way. It's still obviously dangerous, but you're not coming from the sides where you can turn and get.
Now, is this a veterinarian that's doing the jumping on the back, or a zoo person?
It's care staff. So people have gone through a great deal of training to be able to do that, do it properly, efficiently, safely.
Right.
And ensure everyone from every person to the alligator stays safe. Uh-huh. It's a really cool process. Once you've got it, when you've got people who are like well trained to do it and working all in unison, it's very quick, efficient. We were able to get those procedures done very quickly with minimal stress for the gators. We actually, when I left there, we were doing a lot of work to try and
get more of those, the exam behaviors to be voluntary. So we had successfully drawn blood from an alligator's tail while he was awake just through training alone. That was really neat. We were working on voluntary radiographs for them. Several of those gators were already scale trained. We could bring a scale board out onto the beach and walk them onto it. So we didn't have to do an exam to get their weight. We just didn't do it super often because they didn't fluctuate weight very much. You could look at them and see how big they were. And like, oh yeah, they're very healthy. Yeah, they were the kind of things that you could teach them. They were, if you want to talk about things that surprise you, those animals were impressive.
Wow.
From a cognitive standpoint, I mean, they had personalities. It was great. It was so much fun. They were fun.
So you could tell by looking at them who was who and by their behavior. Yeah. Great. That's great.
Yeah. They all looked different enough. It took time to figure it out, but they all looked different. We had one that was mischievous, that liked to try and steal the food bucket.
Mm-hmm.
Creep up the beach when no one was watching.
Uh-huh.
And try to steal the big training food bucket.
Yeah.
And then one time she grabbed it.
Uh-huh.
And we whipped around and we were like, Snuggly! And then she like threw it up in the air, like in her mouth, and ran it in the water like a dog. It was like a dog sneaking up doing something they shouldn't. And as soon as she saw her, she grabbed the bucket and ran.
That was funny. And we like 3 days to fish that bucket out of the bay because it was so, everything's gone. An entire 10 pounds worth of fish, chicken.
Oh boy.
Oh, boy. It was the funniest thing in the world.
Well, that's very funny. I love that you were working towards giving them choice so that they could choose to do things and reduce the fear, reduce the stress, and increase the safety, I would imagine. So,
Definitely.
That's wonderful. When we come back, I love the story about them having, you know, that sense that they have intuition, the way that they know things that you couldn't know how they know. So we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll be right back with Albert Ferraro, zookeeper from Florida.
You know the expression, cats have 9 lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Hey friends, if you like what you're hearing and want to learn more, check out Dr. Joseph's book, The Human-Animal Connection, Deepening Relationships with Animals and Ourselves. Or visit the website, thehumananimalconnection.org, to book an online consultation. Thank you for loving animals. Now back to the show.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Human-Animal Connection. And we were just talking on the break about a wonderful story of you working with a certain relative of the apes, a Siamang, it's called. And tell us about your experiments when you brought them a little handheld mirror from the dollar store.
So I wanted to broaden their enrichment, so I went to the dollar store. I just bought a bunch of random things, mostly some like perfumes and things that I could use for all the animals. But I picked up a small handheld mirror. Mirrors are great for a lot of animals, for certain animals, they don't know it's them, it's someone else, so that's interesting for them. I remember, this is a tangent to that story, but we had a ringtail lemur at one facility I worked at. He lived in a small group of lemurs, but whenever we put a mirror out for them, he would do their full what's known to in ringtail lemurs as stink fighting, where they use scent glands on their wrist to scent their tail and then flick it at the rival male to try and win the affection of the females. So every time we brought a mirror out there, we would call it Nick's arch rival. because he would go into that full behavior of fighting the other male, even though the male was him, which is great for them to go through that full courtship process of winning over the female, even though he already won over his girlfriend who lived on the island with him. But it was just, it was hysterical to watch because we would joke like, oh, this guy's got the same moves as I do.
Mm-hmm.
But so back to the main story, I brought this little handheld mirror up to, I worked with a family group of Siamang. So it was mom, dad, their older offspring who was still living with them. Usually in lesser apes, that they live with their parents until about 6 years old before they go off on their own. And they had another baby with them. So I hold up this little mirror to them and they're all kind of staring at it and like kind of furrowing almost. You're like, what is that? Like, is that, you know, another family group or something? And then they reached out, touched it. And then they tried, I remember watching them, they tried to touch the sides of it as if they were trying to touch the other Siamang shoulders. Like, and then they realized there was nothing there. There was no other parts of them. And they were kind of staring for a minute. And I remember them very gently reaching out. Now they have very human-like hands. I mean, their hands are almost about the same as ours. Their fingers are just a lot longer. They just reach out with their hands. They grab the mirror just ever so gently and turn it around to see that there's nothing on the back. And I was one of the most interesting things because they, you know, I watched them in real time learn and understand what a mirror was and understand what their own reflection was. It was one of the coolest things I've ever seen. Like, oh,
yeah, because it's a concept. Well, you know, we're paper on that alone. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Like we take it for granted that we can look at a part of ourself in the mirror and know that the rest of us is there. And just to watch them kind of come to the whole conclusion of what this little piece is, that's really fun to do. Yeah.
Yeah. You see a lot of the higher primates, you can really see that kind of self-awareness in there. You know, I've seen spider monkeys who love mirrors just because they love looking at themselves, or they're fascinated that they can look at themselves. Like, they'll sit there, they'll just hang from somewhere and stare and like, oh.
That's great.
It's hysterical.
Yeah. So do you have a favorite species in the zoo?
Oh, I fell in love with tapir. Tapir are amazing. I've worked with four of them now.
What's a tapir?
Tapir are they're a large kind of, the best way to describe them is an archaic hoofed animal. So they're what hoofed animals would have looked like millions of years ago. That may be a little, yeah, probably. So they have these big, like, fleshy feet with a big, huge, like, you know, fleshy pad. But each toe has a hoof on it.
Mm-hmm.
They look a lot like, I tell people they look like the animals in Ice Age, because they have that prehensile snout that they can use to reach out and grab things or snorkel up for the water. They're really cool animals. They're in that odd-toed ungulate family. So horses, donkey, zebra, rhino, animals like that. But they kind of are in their own like little offshoot. Like, they're mostly related to themselves because they're a very living fossil type of species.
Wow.
So there's three in the New World here. There's mountain tapirs, lowland tapirs, and Baird's tapirs, all in Central and South America. And then there's the big, like, if you've ever seen they're like half black, half white, the Malayan tapirs, those are the ones you usually see when people talk about them. They're really big. Those live in Southeast Asia. They're really cool animals. I've worked with several of them now over the years. I worked with them at my first zoo, a breeding pair and one of their offspring. And then when I came to where I work now, the female that we have was the offspring from that first zoo, the next offspring, like right after I left. I remember when I was leaving and going to my next zoo, they said, oh, we're about to put the tapirs together again to breed. Well, I found out later, I said, oh, that was you.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. and developed a very close relationship with her. And I've because I was like, I knew your parents and your older sister.
What are their personalities like?
They're kind of like what you probably like what a wild horse would be like. They can be a little on the flighty side, but when they're younger, obviously, but you know, the ones that I've worked with have spent their lives around people. And so they're very personable. I knew an elderly taper who was one of the oldest in North America. She was had a very unique personality. She was a kind of like jokingly like a grumpy old lady. She liked people, but she didn't like seek out affection from us. If we came up, you know, wanted to love her because we did love her, she would be like, "Oh, okay, fine." You know, for me to eat though, you got any apple cheeks for me? But other than that, she was like, "All right, leave me alone. I'm gonna go sleep in the yard with the little capybaras or so." But I've worked with a female that was hand raised, that loves people, that seeks out people all the time. Like, she loves us. And I worked with a male who was one of the best animals who I ever worked with. He was. Normally parent reared and everything, but he loved people. He was one of the best animals to train that I ever trained. I trained so many different behaviors with him. He could, by the time he went to where he lives now, he went to a zoo in Texas. I trained him to be able to draw blood voluntarily. Mm-hmm. He took all his vaccinations voluntarily. He would step up onto a hoof block for us to either work on his hooves or take x-rays of his hooves, or we could just do it while he was laying down. We could work on his hooves if they needed it. He did that. He would open his mouth on cue so we could look at his teeth. He was great. He was awesome. I loved him.
He was great.
He was fun. We could, with those tapers, do practically a full exam with them being awake.
That's great. That's wonderful. Yeah. That's wonderful. Well, when you go in the morning, who's the one you most want to see?
That taper.
Taper. Okay.
Morning.
Good morning. Yes. And do they respond to your voice, your personality, your energy? Like, yeah. They know you from the other zookeepers or whatever. They definitely have a personal relationship. Well, that's great.
Everyone's having trouble with her. They call me. I need help. She doesn't want to do it. I'm like, I'll come. Don't come. I'll show you.
That's sweet. It's very sweet. Well, I'm so glad that people like you who love animals are there with them at the zoo and working to get them to be able to learn how to do these procedures that they have to go through more voluntarily. That's the right direction. Whenever animals can make their own choices, we know that it's a better world for them and for us. So thank you for all the good work you're doing, and thank you for being a guest on our show.
Oh, that was great. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah. Well, we'll be talking again soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll say goodbye to everyone for now and hope to see you in the next episode very soon.
Thank you for tuning in to the Human Animal Connection Show. Please visit our website, thehumananimalconnection.org. There you can sign up for our free email newsletter, book a consultation, or check out our blogs and resources. Our best-selling book, The Human-Animal Connection, is available on Amazon. And your donation of any amount keeps our nonprofit organization providing life-changing services.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.